Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we like to start off your work week with a laugh, so my dad's going to tell a joke. We are going to talk about one of my favorite topics, submarine movies. Yes, we are. We're going to get to that. And we're also talk a little bit about WrestleMania and the results from last night's WrestleMania and so much more. But right now, it is Monday, and that means we are going to review the movies. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to review the new movies and talk about the box office and the movie weekend in general. And, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So it is Monday morning, so that means let's get to the movie reviews, and we welcome Colin and Eric to the show. Here's Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
We'll get to the box office a little bit later on. But, you know, Eric, you called it, though, man.
Yeah. I don't think anyone really had this film doing what it did. I had it higher than most people, and even I was a little bit low on it. So.
Yeah, I was stunned by the numbers. I mean, happily stunned.
Yeah,
by them.
Right.
But, yeah, so the big movie this week, Quiet Place, mm-hmm. which is crazy that a little horror film directed by John Krasinski made more money than Ready Player One did last weekend.
Yeah, and it kind of goes to show you that, you know, sometimes, you know, buzz at film festivals do work.
Yeah.
And, you know, this movie had nothing. I mean, it was 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, you know, with a lot of reviews coming out of South by Southwest,
yeah.
where it was the opening night film, and it built the right amount of buzz.
Yeah.
For it.
Absolutely. I will say this, though. I'm so interested to see because, you know, right on its tail in terms of festival buzz, I can't wait to see what Hereditary does.
Seriously,
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Because judging by the that trailer is insane.
That movie's going to kill people.
Yeah, I can't wait to
see. That movie is going to kill people.
to see it. Oh, man. So we'll see. That opens June 8th. All right. Well, let's lots to talk about this week. Eric, why don't we start off with Eric, tell us about Gemini.
Okay. Speaking of South by Southwest, that's where I saw this movie at last year's, the 2017 South by Southwest Film Festival. And it's kind of an L.A. Modern film noir type tale with Lola Kirk plays an assistant to a Hollywood actress played by Zoe Kravitz. And the movie kind of opens, they're just kind of hanging out. Zoe Kravitz is trying to fight off, you know, people recognizing her. She's trying to maintain a low profile and keep a sort of a private touch while at the same time trying to keep herself relevant in the Hollywood game. And as the first act sort of plays out, there are seemingly a number of people, old acquaintances and new acquaintances, who may be up to no good when it comes to Kravitz's well-being. There's a possibility that one or more of them might be interested in doing her some harm. And as the story plays out, it looks like someone may have just done that. There's no body. She's seemingly gone missing, but there is some blood left behind at her apartment. And Lola Kirk's character is now kind of tasked into almost amateur detective territory with trying to figure out exactly who might be involved, what happened to the body, and all that, while possibly being a suspect herself. John Cho plays a detective who kind of wanders in and out of the movie trying to, you know, figure things out for himself. But the more that the mystery sort of takes over the movie, the less interesting it becomes, especially if you're focused on the mystery aspect of it. The director and writer of the movie is Aaron Katz, who I think did a better film a few years ago called Cold Weather. That was kind of a similar kind of tale about a couple of a brother and sister and kind of an amateur detective type story that I thought was a little more well-rounded. This one I'm kind of interested to revisit now. I saw it well over a year ago, but this is a movie that I think Beyond the Mystery has some interesting things going for it, namely the perception of women in Hollywood and, low-level assistants and the way that they're treated and things like that. And I think that there's possibly another layer that could be of interest given, the way Hollywood has played out over since that time.
Yeah.
So it's a movie. It's kind of a mixed bag. I remember walking out of it South by Southwest going, I really like the look of the movie. I wasn't, wild about the performances. They're so low-key, to almost, just kind of be very non-feeling. Like I said, the mystery element of it doesn't really amount to much. But there are things about it that I think people will find greater interest in if you sort of take away the plot element of it. I think there's some interesting themes going on in the movie that are much better than the movie as a whole.
Okay. All right, and it's playing in three theaters. It's playing in at the AMC Yorktown. It's playing at the ArcLight in Chicago, and it's playing at the River East. So, and that is called Gemini. Okay, there you go. All right, let's get to another one here. Colin, why don't you tell us about The Miracle Season?
All right. Well, this is based on a true story about a high school volleyball team. And it's the start of the school year, and the star player, a girl named Caroline Found, nicknamed Line, and played by Dakota Yarosh. She's one of the most well-liked and popular girls in the school. There's no one who, doesn't adore her. But one night after a party, she borrows her friend's motor scooter, and there's an accident, and she dies. So during this time of grief, this volleyball team, who were state champions the year before, have to carry on without her. And, her best friend, Kelly, played by Erin Moriarty, might have to take her place as the team captain. But it's really up to the coach, played by Helen Hunt, to get these girls back on track. Yeah, even though they don't really have the will to keep playing. So they're kind of the underdogs in this sports story, and while they wouldn't have made this movie if there wasn't some kind of inspirational ending, William Hurt is in this as Caroline's father, who also loses his wife to cancer early in the film. So he has like a double whammy of grief to deal with. And it might have been just as interesting just to make the movie about him, especially since William Hurt is, probably one of the best things about this film. So this sounds like your very typical inspirational true story about a sports team, and that's kind of exactly what this is. It's exactly the movie you expect from Sean McNamara, who directed Soul Surfer a couple years ago. And this is a movie that is mostly interested in hitting those very familiar notes of, your very typical sports movie, whether it's based on a true story or not. All the usual cliches are there. And the same thing for a movie about grief. It's a movie that really is more concerned with, tugging at the audience's heartstrings in really obvious ways and sort of making the stakes seem higher than they actually are in a lot of the situations. I said William Hurt is the best thing about this movie. Helen Hunt is easily the second best thing about this movie. Like what they have to deal with, I found way more interesting than what the students had to deal with. And it just kind of, the student characters are portrayed in this very superficial manner that makes them just more props to keep the story moving rather than treating them as actual characters. So there will be people who will be moved by this film. I just wasn't. I just felt like I knew, I had seen this 100 times before, that this I was more moved at the end, you know, when they show the real people and the footage of the real person. And I had that, this is a feeling of, this is a classic case. I'd rather see a documentary about this than, a sort of ham-fistedly directed, by the numbers, true story film, that really just kind of, you know, didn't move me that much. You might be in the mood for this sort of thing. You know, maybe, you know, some people might need this film. I think maybe young people might have a better reaction to it, who maybe aren't as jaded a film goer as I am. I can only review what I saw and what I felt during the movie. And I just felt like, I'd seen better versions of this kind of story told before. And, this girl I'm sure was an amazing person kind of deserved a better movie, or better treatment than this one. So, giving this one, not really recommending it.
Okay. All right. The latest inspirational sports movie. The Miracle Season. It's out and it's playing everywhere. So, all right, guys, hang on. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric Childress and Colin Suter are going to hang out with us. We're going to take a break. We got the news, and after the news, we'll come back and talk more. We got a lot more movies to review here on Monday morning, and we'll do that right after the news, which is next. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Hi. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6. It's Monday. Monday morning, and on Monday morning, my dad always calls in and tells a joke, so we'll do that. A little jokey time. Movie reviews are happening right now, the Monday morning movie reviews with Eric Childress and Colin Suter. We'll get back to that in a second. Speaking of movies, we're going to talk about great submarine movies, and there are a lot of them. People will be surprised at just how many submarine movies have been made, and it's one of my favorite subgenres, no pun intended. God. And we'll talk a little bit about WrestleMania and some of the results from that as well. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let's get back to it. It's the Monday morning movie reviews with Eric and Colin. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, tell us about Chappaquiddick.
Okay, Chappaquiddick is the story of what happened on the infamous weekend at Chappaquiddick Island when Ted Kennedy was down there hosting or being a part of the party going on, and he had a little too much to drink and took a drive with a young woman, and they ended up crashing off a bridge and into the water. And Ted Kennedy swam away safely, and she was left in the car to drown. He gets back to the house, all soaking wet, and his close confidants trying to figure out exactly what happened. And as they piece together what's going on, they realize that he's in a whole heap of trouble. And this movie then takes us through what essentially is a not so elaborate cover up as the local police begin to put things together. Ted and his team begin trying to figure out exactly what's best for him to say, what exactly might have happened, any possible alibis he might just have, and obviously the political spin that could cost him an eventual run at a chance to be president someday. So here we have another movie about the legacy of the Kennedys. We got a lot of that going on in the last couple of years.
I got to say, is this the first movie that's been made about Chappaquiddick? I mean, besides Blowout?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, except for Blowout. Yeah. To my knowledge, I don't think any film has actually tackled this particular incident.
I don't think so either. And I got to tell you, quite frankly, I'm surprised that it took
this long. It does seem like something would have been made many years ago, but Ted Kennedy was alive.
Yeah, that's true.
For a long time. Yeah. And this is the kind of film that you probably wanted to wait until after he was gone to make, because it's hardly a flattering portrait of the man. I mean, this is a guy that, whatever you might think of him as, a politician, this incident, is not going to make anybody look good. And the way that he was uncertain and, you know, took part in the cover-up, including this wonderfully ridiculous neck brace that he wears at one point that is actually one of the funnier moments in the film, just how ridiculous it is. It's another film about, you know, exactly what is going to be the legacy of this family that was beset with tragedy. And here's one clearly of their own making. Bruce Dern actually plays Joe Kennedy in the film, and Ted is very much looked down upon as a disappointment, considering that he might be tarnishing the Kennedy name forevermore. The movie to me is kind of a mixed bag.
It's got a really good cast.
It's got a really good cast. Ed Helms plays his sort of like a distant cousin or something like that. I can't remember exactly what his official family relationship was, but Ed Helms plays one of the guys that is there, you know, uncertain about whether or not they should be doing this. Jason Clark, I should have mentioned, plays Ted Kennedy. Kate Mara plays the young woman, Mary Kay Kopechnik, I believe is her name, who is the one that dies. And, I mean, if you want a movie about the Kennedy legacy, I would recommend going back and seeing Natalie Portman and Jackie. I thought that was a much more interesting exploration of the concept of legacy, particularly when it comes to this family. The movie itself is just kind of an average kind of political, you know, drama. It's not even so much a thriller because not only you know how this story is going to end, but there's just seemingly no way they could get away with this. And, it makes for kind of a okay casual watch.
Yeah.
I don't think the film goes any deeper than just the surface material of just kind of giving us a brief history of exactly what happened during the course of that week. Ted Kennedy doesn't come off particularly good. Jason Clark is fine in trying to find that balance between being overtly guilty and feeling guilty about it. But I think it's just kind of it's an okay kind of film.
All right, and that's playing everywhere. That's Chappaquiddick, and apparently a lot of people didn't want to see this story.
No.
Didn't make any money. $6 million. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But yeah, there's been a ton of films about the Kennedys over the many years, including, you know, TV miniseries and...
There's one on CNN right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's an endlessly fascinating family, you know, because of all the things that have happened in this family. It's very dramatic. So it's going to, you know, in real life, there's a lot of drama happening with the Kennedys and their legacy and tragedies. And obviously they're going to make movies out of it. Like I said, I was surprised that they hadn't made a Chappaquiddick movie already.
Yeah. I would just go watch Blowout again.
Yeah.
Not going to get much of an argument there.
No. So not for me. So, all right. Chappaquiddick is out there and there you go. All right. Colin, tell us about 1945.
All right, well, this is a film that comes from Hungary, and it takes place in the year 1945, on the day of the end of World War II, and it takes place in a small Hungarian village where a wedding is about to take place, and the village is under Russian occupation, and it's a clerk's son who's about to get married, but two mysterious, or maybe not so mysterious, Jewish men are traveling into the village with a horse and carriage with some cargo, and suspicions among the townspeople starts to mount. The central question among everyone in the town is, what do these men want? Some fear that they're coming back to reclaim the land that was wrongfully taken from them, and some are afraid that more survivors will soon start arriving. And it's a pretty slow reveal about what these guys want, and as suspicions are voiced, some truths about these people start to come out as they try to get ahead of the situation, even though that everything they know is hearsay. So the seemingly perfect idyllic wedding day starts to bring about more truths, more lies start to get revealed, betrayals, And it's really, you're just watching these two guys, these two Jewish men, slowly walk their way up towards this village, and everyone's just kind of freaking out about it. This is a movie directed by a guy named Ferenc Tarok, and I looked it up his IMDb page, and he's been around a while. I've never seen anything else he's done. But this is really a pretty excellent piece of work, and not the usual, you know, you think, oh, it's about Jewish people in 1945, and it's Hungarian village, and blah, blah, blah. And you kind of form images in your head about what you think you're going to see. And this is not that movie. This is very much, it often feels like a Western in a way, in the way it's played out and the way it's the style of it. It's a black and white film. It's a gorgeous black and white film. And it doesn't have the usual kind of somber score that you would expect to hear, you know, accompanied with some of the images in this film. In fact, it's got a kind of a taut, really sort of tense score that makes it feel, in a way, like a spaghetti Western kind of thing. Characters gazing at each other from afar and with suspicion, and people walking into the town, you know, who have no name and who are they and that sort of thing. And it's played out in a very sort of, with a lot of suspense to it. But it's, like I said, it's kind of a slow burn kind of suspense while people are kind of scrambling and revealing things and, you know, just not really stopping and thinking and just ask what these guys, what they want. Everybody just thinks they know. And it's a really interesting film, and one that is, you know, over pretty quickly too. It's like, you know, without credits, it's less than 90 minutes. But in that time, you're seeing some, you know, really terrific acting from the cast. Again, I don't know who any of these actors are, and some really beautiful cinematography and some unusual directing choices. So I'm definitely recommending it, especially, you know, if I think people should see it on the big screen if they can, and they can at the Music Box right now.
It's also playing in Highland Park at the Renaissance.
Oh, right. Okay. But yeah, I definitely recommend people check this one out.
Okay, that's 1945. And again, playing at the Music Box and at the Renaissance Theater in Highland Park. Okay. Guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric Childress and Colin Suter are going to hang on, and we're going to take a break, and we got to come back. We got a few more movies to talk about, and then Eric and I will talk about the box office figures for the weekend as well. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a jokey time. It is also Monday morning movie reviews. That's what we're smack dab in the middle of right now. Speaking of movies, we're going to talk about submarine movies. And, of course, WrestleMania happened last night, and we'll briefly talk about that and give you some of the results from WrestleMania weekend. All that and more, you can text us and call us at 312-981-7200. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. But let's get back to the movie reviews. Eric Childress, welcome back.
Hello.
Colin Suter, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. Eric, tell everybody about Outside In.
Okay. Well, this is a new film from Lynn Shelton, and it stars Jay Duplass as a guy who's been in prison for, I think it's almost something like 15, 20 years, and he is released and comes back to his hometown. His brother is there, played by Ben Schwartz, and he's, you know, doesn't exactly know how to bring himself back into the society after all this time. But the one person he is very much looking forward to seeing is someone who he kept in touch with all those years in prison, and that's an old teacher of his, played by Edie Falco. They were sort of pen pals while he was in there, and she was obviously a teacher when he was a much younger man, but over that course of time in prison, with the only connection he really had to the outside world, he has sort of developed feelings for her, and these are feelings that he is none too good at masking, even though she is married and has children. Not exactly a great marriage, so she keeps him at a distance as far as anything more than friends is concerned, but this is something that he kind of needs now, and she is obviously very reluctant to take part in that, but it might be something that she needs as well. This is, and Lynn Shelton has, she's gone into, you know, she's been directing a lot of television as of late, but before she was doing that, she directed a, you know, a handful of, a couple of really good films, including a very funny movie called Hump Day that starred Mark Duplass, and also a movie called Your Sister's Sister, which also had Mark Duplass and Emily Blunt and Rosemary DeWitt in it. Those are two very good movies. This one is not really not much of a comedy at all. It doesn't even have those sort of those really kind of quirky, humorous touches that she had in those other movies. This one is very dramatic, and it kind of rests primarily on the two performances by Falco and Duplass, and they are very watchable in this movie. It's the reason to see this movie. There are elements of the plot sort of makes its way and is trying to keep them apart, you know, romantically as long as possible. The movie takes some sidesteps in telling us a little bit more about the reason why he was in prison. And so the resentment that he has towards that. And then also a sort of a friendship that develops between him and her younger daughter, played by Caitlin Dever, who was in high school. And, you know, that relationship didn't really do much for me. But anytime the two of them are either on screen together, or particularly when Falco is by herself, an actress that seemingly, it's amazing that we don't see more of her, because she's really just fantastic. And so, you know, this is a movie that I don't think it's as good as some of Shelton's previous works, but it's a movie that entirely rests on these two performances, and that alone is worth recommending it for.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, as you said, the movie is not breaking any new ground, and some of the other relationships don't work, but man, they're both great in it. They're really, really great in it. Edie Falco, you know, she rules. She rules. And I really like Lynn Shelton. I like her work. You know, she directed some great episodes of Love. You know, she directed Glow. She's been around, you know, doing the TV stuff that she's doing is good TV.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. You know, the Santa Clarita Diet, she directed a couple episodes of that. And then not to mention her film work, as you did mention, but both of those movies that you mentioned, Your Sister and Hump Day, are both terrific. And yeah, this is a change of tone for her, as you mentioned. And she used and by the way, she co-wrote it with Duplass.
Yeah, right.
They wrote the film together. And I think there's a lot of really great stuff in it, and I think it's definitely worth seeing. And as you mentioned, Eric, it's 100% because of these two performances. They're both terrific in it. And I'd like to see Edie Falco do more film work. I mean, she was on Nurse Betty forever, and and you know, obviously The Sopranos, and she's done great TV work. But I would like to see
Nurse Jackie.
And Nurse Betty is the that's
a Zellweger movie.
That's a Zellweger movie, right. right. Wait a minute, who directed that one again? That was
LeBute.
LeBute, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, why did that stick into my head from like 17 years ago? But anyway, you know, this is small. It's an intimate movie, and it's really well acted. And if you want to see a couple of actors, you know, really, really giving 100%, then you should see this. I liked it. I'm recommending it. And
mm-hmm.
and so
too.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So that's Outside In. All right. Well, Colin.
Yep.
Why don't you tell us about Blockers?
All right. Well, this is a comedy starring John Cena, Leslie Mann, and Ike Barinholtz as parents of three teenage girls who have been friends since childhood and who are now high schoolers because they're high schoolers about to have their prom night. Only one of them is seriously dating someone, but a conversation between the three of them leads them to a kind of American Pie-like pact. They will all have sex on prom night. And well, the big night comes, and they're all texting each other and using emoticons as innuendo about the sex they'll have and the drugs they'll take and how amazing it will be. And Leslie Mann's daughter, though the one that's actually dating a guy seriously, has her laptop synced up with her phone. And after the three girls take off in the limo, The three parents all see the messages these girls are texting to each other, and they put two and two together and figure out that their daughters are all planning on losing their virginity that evening. So John Cena and Leslie Mann, they want to put a stop to it any way they can, and Baron Holtz is the kind of the boy who never grew up and who really hasn't been around much to raise his daughter, doesn't see it as a big deal and warns them that they'll make what is supposed to be the best night of these girls' lives, and to it'll be the worst if these parents intervene too much or at all, really. Nevertheless, the three of them try to follow this party between the three girls as it moves, or and these three guys as it moves from school to the house party to the hotel, and wackiness ensues.
Okay, hang on. We're gonna take a break, and then we'll get our reviews of Blockers coming up right after the news. We'll take a quick break here with the news, and then more movie reviews after this on 720 WGN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We do our Monday morning show from up here, and then Tuesday through Friday we're downstairs in the Showcase studio. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning for the jokey time. And we're going to talk about submarine movies and give you some of the results from WrestleMania as well. But right now we are in the middle of doing the movie reviews, the Monday morning movie reviews. Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me every week to talk movies, and then Eric and I will also talk about the box office. Big weekend for Paramount this weekend. So we'll talk about that coming up here. But right now, before the break, before the news, Colin told us about Blockers, the plot for Blockers. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, now we know the plot for for Blockers. So tell us what you thought.
I think when... I think American comedies are just stuck in many different ways. I think they're just kind of stuck in this rut of, certain jokes that have to be met and certain, types of improv that have to be done. And it feels like this movie is just kind of checking off that list. There's a lot of talent here, certainly. John Cena is proving himself to be a very unexpected and very funny, talented comedic actor. Leslie Mann, of course, we've seen her over the years do some great work. I like the two of them together. I kept having to remind myself, though, that their chemistry is I thought they were just two parents of one kid, but they're three separate, they're three, this trio of parents are three separate kids. But it just feels like the usual, this movie. The usual... sight gags, the usual sort of over-the-top sex jokes, visual gags. And the movie just kind of goes through the motions of that. It's not without laughs and it's not without charm. But then there you get to a scene where John Cena and the other two are walking up to this house that's having this big party, and they're immediately stopped by the teenagers running it, and... the teenagers are not at all intimidated by John Cena's physique, and John Cena is immediately intimidated by the teenagers and goes along with what they're asking him to do, just so the movie can have a really over the top farcical gag
involving butt chugging.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just kind of, the movie does not take advantage or of John Cena's physique. I mean, this is an unusually well-built guy for a suburban dad. So it's like you just kind of don't even buy it. Even when you're trying to suspend your disbelief for a comedy like this, which is what you're supposed to do. But, just kind of movie kind of loses credibility as a comedy when you're asking to believe stuff like that. I really kind of like the young actors in this one, particularly Geraldine Viswanathan and Miles Robbins. And she's the one who plays John Cena's daughter. and the guy that she's going to prom with. I like those two. I don't think I'd seen them in anything before, but I like their chemistry and I like their characters, and they kind of stuck out to me the most. And you know, this is from produced by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, so you kind of know what you're getting into with that. And but I'm just kind of tired of the usual movie that this is, you know, the forced bonding at the end. It just kind of goes by the numbers, and it's directed by Kay Cannon, and this is her directorial debut, and it just kind of feels like she watched a lot of the same movies that we've all seen 100 times already before. So I don't know. The audience I was with was kind of felt like it was the same reaction. It wasn't a lot of huge laugh out loud moments. It almost kind of felt like we were all in the same boat on this one. Some laughs. It's not, like I said, not without laughs, not without charm. This is a really mostly, you know, like this is a really good cast. Not a huge fan of Ike Barinholtz in this. I don't think he's that funny. He's supposed to be kind of the real kind of loose cannon in this, but I just didn't warm up to me that much. I can't really recommend this one.
Okay. Eric.
the one part of Colin's review that I do really agree with is the John Cena physique aspect. As you know, as he said in Trainwreck, I look like Mark Wahlberg ate Mark Wahlberg.
Right.
Which is a great line. And but other than that, I have so many disagreements with Colin's review. Although I admit the film, there is an uneven quality about the film that kept me from fully being on board with it when I saw it. There are elements of the film that, you know, Colin mentioned, you know, a number of sight gags in the film, and I think the film is at its best when the characters are reacting to stuff rather than being proactive. Like the butt chugging scene didn't work for me. There's a whole bit in a car that doesn't work for me. But there are other elements, like the scene where they are in the computer and discover what's going on that sets everything in motion. That scene is not only incredibly funny but has a fantastic punchline at the end of it. I disagree with Colin. I think Ike Barinholtz is maybe the funniest thing in this movie. And I think that the arc that he has, and forget about the parents for a second, but the emotional bond that he eventually has with his own daughter,
who's played by go ahead.
I was going to say it's played by Pamela Adlon's daughter.
Yep.
I think that of the three girls, I think she was the best. I actually think John Cena's, the actress playing John Cena's daughter was at times exceptionally annoying. I thought she was overplaying her hand for a lot of the movie, trying to, be that overtly, hip kind of girl. There were times I just thought she was overplaying that character. But there are, there's a moment where Leslie Mann has to, sneak around a hotel room that I thought was pretty nicely done. And I agree that Cena has, kind of slowly built his way up into a pretty fine comic actor. So it's an uneven movie, but I thought it was a film that had a lot of big laughs throughout, in between those moments that don't quite work. And I think that the bonding moments at the end of the movie do work for the most part. And I think that, a movie that, could have very, very easily just been another She's Out of Control, Tony Danza, ends up being a film that I think smartly, gives enough time between not just the parents and their sort of horrific view of what's going on, and the girls, while wanting to jump headfirst into, this new experience, are full of self-doubt and not quite sure of themselves either. And I think that there is something real about that. And when they get down to having a conversation about, why is this so bad? And they're just kind of like, I don't know. There's no real answer for it. And I like that. But I will say that the one kind of sight gag set piece that I did like, there's a I won't give it away, but there's a moment involving another set of parents walking around a house that I won't even say who the actors are, but I thought that scene was really funny. So it's an uneven film. I'm telling, you know, people ask me to see it. I said, yeah, you should see it and try to see it with a crowd, because the crowd that I saw with the South by Southwest were obviously going nuts. They tend to. And I was laughing in between some of their laughter. But, you know, I wouldn't tell people not to see this movie.
Yeah, you know, shockingly, I'm with Eric on this. And I went in, and I know, I remember when you reviewed it,
yeah.
You know, you were like, it's better than you think it's going to be. Because I had, I mean, when I saw the commercials for it, and they were showing the butt chugging on the commercials, I was like, oh, God. You know, and I just was like, and you know, and Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg produced it, and they have, you know, sort of this tone to all of their movies that is kind of the same. And like you, Colin, I've kind of, you know, reached my, you know, my limit on, you know, stuff like Neighbors and Neighbors 2 and all that and all those things. But there's a real, to me, there's a real humanity to this movie that I found surprising. I thought all the kids were great. I thought all of them were terrific. Some big laughs among these kids. And this Gideon Adlon, who is Pamela Adlon's daughter, she's terrific. And she's, I think all the kids are really good. Leslie Mann is just now, she's just so strong in these movies. Like, she's just terrific. And we all know that. Like, just like, you know, her energy and what she does, she knows this stuff so well, and she has this incredible capacity to play the broad stuff really well and then bring some real humanity to it. Because you know, like, I felt bad for her during the movie. I felt bad for her character about what was happening and how she was reacting to it, and then, like, this realization that she has to come to that her daughter's growing up and is moving away. That to me felt real in a movie that shouldn't have felt that real. I thought Cena was really charming, and yeah, I guess there's an issue with the fact that the guy is all big as a horse, that nobody is going to say anything about that. I agree with that, but I thought he was charming and good, and I thought Ike Barinholtz was hilarious in it. I don't know, man, and I've never been a huge fan of that guy, but I just thought he was hilarious, and, you know, any time you reference Inferno more than once, I was, like, peeing myself laughing. There are a lot of big laughs in this movie, and there are a lot of, and I will say this, some great, I think every possible bodily function, every single one of them is played for laughs and part of sight gags in this entire movie. And I never was like, there's a scene, you know, like, they have everything. Like, there's a vomit sequence in the movie that made me, I laughed my ass off during it. And you know, the butt chugging thing, couple of giggles in there about that. This married couple that you guys are talking about, I'm not real sure I wanted to see the actor's junk. That wasn't something I don't think, yeah, I wanted to see, but I appreciate that he did it, because it's not like a no name. The guy, you know what I mean? It's not like, yeah, he's some unknown actor. Everybody knows this guy. And I thought that was pretty funny. And I laughed a lot during this movie, and it was a movie that I didn't think that I was going to like. It's not perfect. Some of the gags are hit and miss. Some of it is corny. It's not it's clearly not one of the best comedies, you know, of the year or of, you know, but I think it's not only serviceable, but very funny and very sweet. And I did not expect that at all. So I'm recommending it, man. And the crowd I saw it with, they had a great time. My parents had a great time. So, yeah, I liked it, man. And this is, like, one of the biggest surprises. Seriously, guys, one of the biggest surprises of the year for me was how much I laughed at this movie. So, anyway, Eric and I recommend it. Colin doesn't. All right. Everybody hang on, okay? All right, guys, hang on a second. There's Eric. There's Colin. They're going to hang on. We come back. We're going to review A Quiet Place. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we are talking about the movies. It's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me every week to talk about them, and then Eric will hang out, and we'll talk box office as well. And let's get back to the movie reviews. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, tell us about A Quiet Place.
Okay. Well, this was the opening night film at the South by Southwest Film Festival, and as the movie opens, we meet a family of five. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt play the parents of three young children who are walking through what seems to be an abandoned town, being very, very quiet. One of their children, their eldest daughter, is deaf, so they're all communicating through sign language. But we see that they are making incredible efforts not to make any sounds whatsoever. As this sort of prologue takes shape, we just see newspaper headlines. Basically, some sort of alien apocalypse has occurred, and the aliens can have super sensitive hearing, and if they hear any sound and there happens to be a human at the other, or anything living at the other end of that sound, that thing is human, animal, is not long for this world. Eventually, the family ends up holed up at a farmhouse, doing their best to just survive and continue living. Emily Blunt is also pregnant several months along. And so the movie basically takes us through their everyday existence, just trying to be quiet. That's all you really need to know about this movie that I talked about at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
And it's an exceptional piece of work. John Krasinski not only stars in the movie, but also co-wrote the screenplay, or took a sort of a rewrite of the screenplay, and directed the film. And it's an extraordinary piece of direction by Krasinski, a guy that, if you've seen his two previous films, I always forget the name of the first one he did, Interviews with People. I think it was a David Foster Wallace book, actually, mm-hmm. and a movie called The Hollers. This is not the movie you would have ever expected out of him. Not that he's certainly untalented by any stretch, but this takes him into a completely another level of filmmaking, because there are great horror directors that have never made something quite this good. It's a film that, I mean, the word quiet is clearly in there for a reason. This is a movie that does not have a lot of dialogue, because you just can't. You have to communicate through sign language. And yes, there are a lot of subtitles in the movie. And it's a movie where every bit of sound means something. It can put you on edge. It could relieve you, but mostly keeps you on edge. And the sound design in this movie is just amazing. Krasinski has a great eye behind the camera. There are wonderful, the cinematography is wonderful in this film, and he manages to create some set pieces that are just unnerving to the point of just collapsing in your seat. Particularly a centerpiece one where you cannot imagine how someone in that situation cannot make a sound for as long as that person possibly can. If you want to, say it's a little unrealistic, just please suspend your disbelief just a bit and go along with this ride, because you're definitely in for something. And as much credit as Krasinski is getting behind the camera, and is well-deserved, I think he deserves equal amount of praise for his performance in the movie. I think it's the best thing he's done in front of the camera, let alone behind it. Emily Blunt is every bit as equal. The kids are terrific in the movie. And it's one of those films that, it seems like it might be a film that's not going to have a lot of closure. It might be one of those films that audiences might think that is going to, end in a certain way or end very abruptly. This movie, has kind of one of those endings, but it's a perfect final moment, I think, in the film. And it only made me want to watch the movie again and revisit those set pieces and revisit the performances. I really think this is one of the best films of the year so far.
All right. Colin, Eric, hang on, okay, guys?
Mm-hmm.
All
yep.
right. We'll find out what Colin thought of A Quiet Place. Eric loved it, and we'll find out what I thought of A Quiet Place as well right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Trib Tower, and here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is the Monday morning movie reviews. We're in the middle of those, and my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday. We're going to talk about submarine movies and more. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And stay connected with us on Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Before the break, before the news, Eric Childress told us all about A Quiet Place, and he loved it. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back. So let's
thank you.
Pick it up where we left off. Colin, what did you think of A Quiet Place?
Well, there's nothing I disagree with what Eric said. This is really a great piece of work. And, you know, this is the best kind of horror movie, you know, one that has a very simple concept. And it uses that concept in a really, you know, just kind of uses it for all of its worth and does it in a really smart and, you know, economical way. This is a really tight, you know, 90 minutes, I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just filled with, you know, some really memorable moments. And you really, this is a movie that is, because everybody has to be quiet in it, it forces the audience to be quiet, too. I noticed during the screening I was at just that it was a movie that made everybody shut up during a film. You know, that people just didn't even want to, like, open their candy wrapper too loud for fear of disturbing the mood. Like, that's really cool when a movie can do that. And in large part, it is a big part of it has to do with the performances. I mean, Eric mentioned Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. Obviously, they're doing some of their best work here. The kids deserve a lot of praise as well. Noah Jupe is the young son who is the best friend character in Wonder. Is really good here. And Millicent Simmons, who is in a movie that nobody saw last year called Wonderstruck. You know, she's a deaf girl in real life. And, you know, she's really a tremendous actor in this, too. So there needs to be more movies about deaf girls so she can keep working because she's great. This is just a movie that really gets far on craft and sound design, obviously, and mood and building up set pieces and suspense in a way that few horror movies are able to do these days, particularly mainstream horror movies from big studios. And this movie just does everything right. I love the final moment. Most movies wouldn't have the courage to end on a moment like that, but this movie does, and I think it's fantastic. And yeah, this is great, and it's easily the best movie Michael Bay has ever had his name on, ever. So
you know, yeah. I gotta say, I didn't even know he had anything to do with it until the end credits, and I was like, what?
Yeah,
yeah, no Platinum Dunes, that's, you know, yeah, the production company.
Yeah.
So yeah, highly recommended.
Yeah, well, please. I'm just going to echo everything that you guys said. I thought this movie was great. I loved it. It's really scary and unbelievably suspenseful. You know, that sequence that you're talking about, Eric, that long sequence.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, I was beside myself. I was like, there's a kind of a Home Alone-ish moment.
Yeah.
Where I about lost my mind, and I just, it's beautifully directed. Krasinski builds up the mood perfectly. The set pieces are amazing. All the performances are good. It's also really emotional. There's a moment late in the movie that really killed me. You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, really, really. And it's just really scary and beautifully done. Now, I really urge people to see it in the AMC Dolby Theater, okay? I saw it in the Dolby Theater in Skokie, and the Dolby Theater are the, like, with the insane sound and the great imaging, and you know, it's incredible. You guys have been in the Dolby Theaters.
Oh yeah,
oh, yeah.
Now I saw it in the Dolby Theater, and let me tell you something. The sound, sound was amazing. I jumped 73 times during the movie, but not cheap jumps. Everything in this movie, all the scary stuff and all the suspense is earned. Like, you care about these people. And one of the great things, Colin, you said, it's just a simple premise. You know, there aren't more. There's mm-hmm. only in total 7 actors in the movie. Total. And that's it. You know, so there's no big cast, nothing. It's very, very tight, and you know the surroundings so beautifully. He sets up the lay of the land perfectly, and again, has to do this basically without spoken word, and just, you know, dialogue here and there. No, this is an astonishing piece of suspense work that he did. Everything about it, from the camera work to the editing to the acting and obviously the sound design, it's extraordinary. And the crowd we saw it with, you could hear a pin drop, and I like that. You could, there was nothing. Everybody was just still, except for when they jumped. or squirmed, which was my case. I was like in my seat. Those Dolby theaters, they have those reclining seats, you know, where you're supposed to sit back and relax. No. 15 minutes in, I was not reclining anymore. I can't recline during this. How do you expect me to recline during this movie? It's beautiful stuff, man. It's great. And it's one of the best movies that I've seen so far this year. And if you're a horror fan, if you're a fan of suspense, this is scary stuff. And it's beautifully done. It's a simple story, well told, beautifully directed. Everything about it, I love it. I absolutely love it. So that's three raves for A Quiet Place. Yeah, great stuff. I can't wait to see what Krasinski does next.
Yeah.
I was watching, you know, because obviously he and Emily Blunt were all over, you know, late night shows and doing interviews and stuff, plugging it last week.
Mm-hmm.
Krasinski doesn't like horror movies. They asked him, he's like, you know, I can't remember which show he was on, one of the Jimmys or something. And they asked him, so you a big horror movie fan? He's like, no, I don't like horror movies. They freak me out. And he's like, so I haven't seen a lot of horror movies. I just don't like them. And so he was intrigued by the story of the family and the challenges and stuff. So he ends up making a terrifying movie. What the hell? I mean, he does, for a guy who doesn't like horror movies, he's made one of the best in the past few years.
Well, he must like quirky independent comedies because he made one of the worst ones last year. So maybe he should just do genres he doesn't like and he'll knock it out of the park.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I have not seen the first movie. I saw The Hollers and it was terrible. I think it's funny that the last movie he made is called The Hollers.
Right.
And because you can't do that during this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And there's a very, really terrifying scene where he and the son are go out on a trek to get some food and to get some fish and stuff. And when they're walking back to their farm through the woods and they encounter something.
Yeah.
Please.
And I was so angry.
Oh, God.
I was like, you son of a...
I know. It's like, no, dude, don't do it.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I know. And then the kid who was in The Wonder is so good in... Well, he's good in the entire movie, but he's so good in that scene.
Yeah.
Like, really, like, you feel for him. The terror on that kid's face is real, man. And great stuff, top-notch stuff all the way around. And I couldn't be more thrilled with the amount of money that it made over the weekend. So,
yeah,
a big, big, big recommendation for A Quiet Place. A great, great movie. All right, next week we got The Rock and a Big Ape.
Yeah.
Tearing up Chicago.
That's right.
Yeah. And what else we got? We've got...
Truth or Dare, new Blumhouse movie on Friday the 13th.
Yep.
Beirut with John Hamm.
John Hamm, right.
You Were Never Really Here, the Lynn Ramsey film with Joaquin Phoenix.
And then there's a movie called Submergence, which has my main man McAvoy in it.
It's a Wim Wenders film.
Yeah, it's Wim Wenders, and it's got...
Yeah, and Lean on Pete, which is an A24 film that I've heard nothing but fantastic things about.
Colin, you've seen that one.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. Tip my hat right now, a week ahead of time. Go see it, people.
All right,
we'll
there you go.
Next week.
Okay, we will talk about it next week. Colin, thanks, buddy.
All righty.
All right, and we will talk to you next week. Eric, we can jump in on here on the box office. As we mentioned, the big, big story is the movie that we just praised, A Quiet Place, which made $50 million over the weekend. And you picked a high number, and it was even higher than that.
Yeah, I was thinking high 30s for this. The buzz out of South by Southwest was great. I thought what you had been seeing on Twitter, and obviously the reviews were not just good. They were fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For the movie. And it's like 97% right now. And, clearly people were interested in it. It had a huge Friday, clearly carried over well into the weekend because it ended up with $50 million. The way that this looks like it could play out, history and types of movies that it is and when it opened and whatnot, this is a movie that right now, first estimate, could be headed anywhere between $150 and $169 million.
Wow. That's amazing. What did it cost? Mm-hmm. It didn't cost anything, did it?
$17
million. Oh, man.
This could, we've talked about, Paramount's had its woes over the last couple of years, pretty much.
Yeah.
This could be their most successful film profit-wise since the last Mission Impossible movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, cool. And they got another Mission Impossible movie coming out.
That's right.
God, that trailer's good. Oh, mm-hmm. man, it's good. All right. Number two, Ready Player One, $25 million. That's solid.
Yeah, very solid hold. Only a 40% drop, and not quite $100 million in the U.S. yet, but it's going to get there in the next couple of days.
Yeah,
but it is at $391 million worldwide.
Yeah.
So this thing is headed for over $500 million. I think it needs to get closer to $600 million to actually turn a profit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still it has a huge cost, not just production, but all the publicity and everything
sure.
afterwards.
Sure.
So this is a movie that needs to still make some more money, but it's doing well. And yeah, I don't know, how much Rampage is going to take out of it next week.
Yeah. Okay, and then another solid opening. But the top three, pretty strong stuff right there. Blockers with $21.4 million. That's a good opening.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. I think that this is a film that's going to have good word of mouth. Like you said, I mean, Game Night, opened lesser than this and ended up, making $67 million. I think that the more people who discover this movie are going to, tell their friends. And it's a movie that appeals to not just the adults who want to see an R-rated comedy, but it appeals to teenagers too because it has both of their points of views.
Yeah.
In the film. So I think that it has a wider appeal. And it wouldn't surprise me if you saw this thing, stretch itself to around like $75 million.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that. You know what, man? It's just, to me, it's a crowd pleaser. You know what
yeah.
I mean? It really is. It's the simplest of, it's not a perfect movie, but I had a good time. And I laughed a lot more than I thought I would.
Right.
So, all right. Number four, it will just not stop. Black Panther. $8.4 million in its seventh week. It's up to $665 million just in America.
Yeah, officially the third highest grossing film in domestic history. It has passed Titanic. So your list now is Force Awakens, Avatar, Black Panther.
Unbelievable.
It's just shy of $1.3 billion worldwide. It's about to pass Last Jedi for worldwide gross,
wow.
Which will make it ninth all time. And, yeah, in between that and a really good episode of Black Jeopardy the other night,
yeah.
Black Panther is continuing to go, and we got three more weeks, and we got more Black Panther.
Right, the Avengers, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crazy story, man. Unbelievable. Number five, I Can Only Imagine, still making some pretty strong money, $8.3 million.
Up to $69 million now.
Million,
yeah. And this is a really fascinating story. I mean, I've heard that song. I don't know how you make a movie
yeah.
out of writing that song because there's not much to that song. And apparently, it's like the most played song on Christian rock radio or
right.
Whatever it might be.
Right.
And clearly, it got stuck in a lot of people's heads.
Yeah. Number six is Tyler Perry's Acrimony, which made $8 million, $31.3
yeah.
million. Didn't cost anything, correct?
No.
Okay.
I heard it was shot in 8 days, too.
It was shot in 8 days, yes.
Yeah.
Number seven, Chappaquiddick, $6.2 million. We talked about that one a little bit earlier on, and not a lot of people were interested in that.
Yeah. This is, Byron Allen's Entertainment Studios, we mentioned last week, put this thing out, and they paid $4 million for it out of Toronto. But they spent like another $16 million on just advertising. Apparently, at least $15 of that was just on that show that you were watching.
Yeah,
that,
funny you should ask. I watched it again.
Right.
I watched it again last night. Like every commercial break, there were two commercials for Chappaquiddick.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. So they're about $20 million in, and that's not even costing the production cost of the movie
right.
was, which they had nothing to do with. They
right.
just distributed it.
All right, and then Sherlock Gnomes, Pacific Rim Uprising. Wow, what a bomb that is.
Yeah.
And Isle of Dogs. Now, how is Isle of Dogs? It's up to $11.1 million. Is it doing okay? Because it's only
it's doing okay. Fox Searchlight hasn't quite rolled this out in the same way that they did Grand Budapest Hotel, which had a much higher per screen average, and it was like four,
right.
like four theaters, and they boosted up really quickly, and it still had a huge number. Still, I think the highest grossing film of Anderson's career.
Yeah.
This one, I think that they kind of missed the opportunity to sort of get this one out there a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's a movie. It's a little bit more for adults, clearly, than kids.
Right.
So they should have taken advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. So next week, what do you think is going to be on top? Is it going to be Rampage?
I think it's going to be Rampage. I'm wondering if this thing is going to maybe, there's not going to be as much interest for it. I mean, I know Rock's coming off of Jumanji
yeah.
and all that, and this is the same guy that he did San Andreas with,
right.
which was a had a huge opening, was a big hit for them. I'm thinking it's going to be Rampage, but I'm thinking maybe like low 30s, high 20s. And I think Quiet Place is going to be right there with it. And then I think Truth or Dare is going to do very well as well.
Yeah, it will. It will. All right, Eric. Well, we'll find out next week. Thanks, man.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Take care. There's Eric Childress. He'll be back with Colin Suter next Monday morning when we review all the new movies and do the box office as well. Right now, we got to take a break. We've got weather and traffic, and I got the weather for you right now.